From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. CIA head Mike Pompeo on Monday managed to squeak out an approval from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to be Donald Trump's new Secretary of State. The Senate committee was expected to reject Pompeo, but a last-minute vote switch by Senator Rand Paul helped him pass. Pompeo, who's recently revealed a secret meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was expected to help his case, still faces stiff opposition from Democrats when his nomination goes to the full Senate for a vote. Progressives fear that Pompeo's role as state secretary could direct U.S. foreign policy in an even more hawkish direction. My guest is John Rainwater, Executive Director of Peace Action. Welcome to the program, John.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what do you make of the votes in the Senate committee on Monday? This was expected to be a big embarrassment for Trump when the Senate committee voted to reject Pompeo, but Pompeo made it through. Apparently, Trump personally called Senator Paul.
Yeah, no, obviously they leaned on Rand Paul. I think it's a combination of two things. On the one thing, Senator Paul was probably doing his own vote counting, and you did have Democrats like Senator Heidi Heitkamp come out before the hearing saying that they were going to support the nomination. So Paul may have seen the writing on the wall in terms of the vote on the floor, at least an indication of what might be. And at that point, he may have had a price. And with the administration apparently very motivated to flip him as a vote, we don't know. Maybe Mr. Paul got something for that. He claims it's that he was reassured on issues like Iraq and the Iraq war being a mistake, and as well as the continuing war in Afghanistan. But you never know with the Senate. There, as everybody knows, there's horse trading that goes on behind the scenes, and that may have been part of this.
Right. It's interesting. Rand Paul, who has sold himself as a principled libertarian and who opposes war as part of his libertarian ideology, is a Republican. So the Senate committee vote was strictly down party lines. What do you expect to happen in the full Senate for a vote? Of course, as a reminder, Democrats are still the minority party, but just barely.
Absolutely. And there's sort of good news and bad news here, I think. The good news is, although Pompeo received 14 votes on the floor when he was nominated to be head of CIA, 14 Democratic votes, I should say, a number of those Democratic members said they are revisiting those votes. And it did look like many Democrats were rallying around the idea that we can't have Pompeo, such a hawkish individual, somebody who again and again has said their preferred approach to foreign policy is military means and regime change even. Why would we have this person be our top diplomat? So you were seeing a lot of Democrats rally around that message. Unfortunately, three red state Democrats have come out in favor of Mr. Pompeo, including Heidi Heitkamp, Mr. Donnelly, and Mr. Manchin. And so at that point, you know, getting to blocking him, it looks like less of a possibility here. So there was a push that looked like it was going in the right direction. And then with the committee vote and some other statements, it looks like we might not have the votes on the floor.
Let's get deep into why your organization and others oppose Pompeo's nomination as Secretary of State. I mentioned that the recent revelation that he had met some weeks ago with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, you know, a historic meeting by any accounts, seems to suggest that he might push U.S. foreign policy in a more peaceful direction, because on North Korea, the Trump administration seems to be going in the right direction, but that seems to be an exception. What are there issues about Pompeo we should pay attention to?
Well, it's actually a whole variety of things. I mean, at the top line, he has not been very supportive of diplomacy in general. And so this outreach to North Korea, which was done in secret and done before he was moved over to the State Department. So there are some things to be concerned about, although preparation and diplomacy prior to any summit meeting is a good thing. But on a whole host of issues, Pompeo has supported war and supported regime change. For example, he's not only been one of the most virulent critics of the Iran deal, he's actually come out and said during the negotiation the Obama administration was doing on the Iran deal, oh, well, we could take care of this through military means. If we had, I think it was 200 sorties of our Air Force bombing the right facilities in Iran, that might be a better approach to diplomacy. And this is, wow, our American diplomats are overseas meeting with Iranian officials and the other countries in the P5 plus one. So he is not a friend to diplomacy. On North Korea, he said similar things. You know, the North Korean people would be thrilled if they got rid of Kim, and what we have to do is separate him from the nuclear weapons, not have an agreement that gets rid of the nuclear weapons, but separate the two, where it was sort of clear that he was referring to regime change. So there's a real preference for regime change. One more thing on Iran, he gave a speech to an Iranian, you could call it a dissident group. They've been listed as a terrorist group. That next year, I hope that we're meeting in a liberated Tehran where you guys are in charge. So there's a real devotion to regime change. And to have that approach in the State Department is scary. What he said is, I'm going to be different in the State Department. Now my job is diplomacy. Well, his job was a member of Congress. His job was the head of the CIA. You know, he didn't have to be all about regime change. Now, then, why should we expect that it's going to be different now?
So the situation with Iran is in the news as French President Macron visits Donald Trump in the White House. And right away, we heard that the Iran deal, despite the fact that these two leaders seem to have some kind of personal connection, the Iran deal is one of several they disagree on. European leaders want to see the Iran deal that they worked on with President Obama preserved. And so Macron is visiting Trump at a time when Trump is pushing for somebody quite against that Iran deal. How do you think, so it seems as though Trump may be between Macron and Pompeo on the Iran deal, but ultimately Pompeo may have his ear?
Absolutely. You've got Pompeo on his right ear and you've got John Bolton on his left ear. And
right, so, exactly. The triad, that's a really important issue. National Security Advisor John Bolton with Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State, those two whispering in Trump's ears is going to be a very terrifying thing.
It is terrifying. And on the Iran deal, I mean, my hope, you know, or naive, you know, aspiration was that for Trump, it was about the election and opposing everything that Obama was for. So that's why he was against the Iran deal. But now he's got a couple of ideologues by his side, really critical of the Iran deal. What happened today with Macron, apparently, was Macron was trying to do this fancy maneuver of saying, we can address all the things that President Trump cares about, ballistic missiles, terrorism, Iran's acts in the region, but we'll do that by building on top of the Iran deal. So that's the dance that's going on between the United States and Europe, with the Europeans saying, yes, you can get what you want, Mr. President, but do it by building on the Iran deal, not by getting rid of it. We'll find out soon enough whether any of that is working, because there's a deadline coming up, as many of the folks listening to this, seeing this know, and that is that the president has to continue to waive the Iran deal sanctions. So by middle of May or so, we will know which way we're headed on this.
Now, with this potential triad of Trump, Bolton, and Mike Pompeo leading U.S. foreign policy. What do you expect? This is all happening, you know, Pompeo's Senate committee approval is happening just around the time when we got a terrible report of a wedding party in Yemen being bombed by Saudis, ostensibly with U.S. weapons. More than 20 people were killed. This reminded me so much of the wedding parties that the U.S. would bomb in Afghanistan, you know, repeatedly over both George W. Bush and Obama. And this is something that's being done with the U.S.'s blessing. We've had the recent strikes on Syria. No plans to get out of Afghanistan. What do you expect to happen under Pompeo, Bolton, and Trump?
Well, it's very troubling to have more and more of these hawkish voices in the ear of the president on these issues. One piece of good news that maybe not everybody knows about is on the issue of Yemen, where we are, the United States is involved very deeply when you think about it, by refueling the Saudi planes that are dropping bombs on weddings and schools, on water treatment plants in a way that fuels the cholera epidemic there. The United States is deeply involved, but Congress has become more involved. We did not win the recent vote in the Senate, but we received, I think it was 44 votes against the war in Yemen. And so I think the Saudis and the administration are feeling the pressure on Congress to extricate the United States from being so involved in this horrible human rights crisis in Yemen. And so we'll have Pompeo. That's not going to make it any easier, but the Yemen policy was already very problematic. But we just need to really mount a greater opposition in Congress to these policies. And I think that can put the pressure on. If nothing else, it forces the Saudis to think about every strike. Clearly didn't work in the case of this particular strike, but the more pressure we put on, the better human rights will be. But overall, it's a huge problem when James Mattis is your best hope for a peaceful foreign policy. That's not a great situation. So Congress really needs to become more engaged on foreign policy issues.
Right. And I brought up Yemen under U.S. foreign policy, even though the U.S. isn't the one directly doing the bombing, but it should certainly be still seen as part of U.S. policy because it has essentially told Saudi Arabia that it can go ahead. And I understand there are advisors advising the Saudi bomb droppers and, of course, U.S. weapons being used.
We're deeply involved. I mean, I consider that to be, and I think most of the people I talk to, you know, the U.S. is at war. We're not pulling the trigger, but we're refueling the planes. We're offering intelligence advice. We're deeply engaged in this war. And people may be unaware that this is the number one human rights crisis in the world today. A million people in the cholera epidemic, that cholera epidemic was caused by the war from the destruction of civilian infrastructure, which is being intentionally targeted by the Saudis. They're intentionally starving the people there. So it's definitely a part of U.S. foreign policy. You're absolutely right. It's part of this, what you'll see with Pompeo and with Bolton, this lean heavily towards the Saudis against the Iran, against Iran, and it's having tragic, tragic consequences. So it's one of the most, to peace action, it's one of the most important foreign policy issues in terms of U.S. military policy that there is.
I want to pick up finally on what you mentioned about Congress needing to take a larger role. The authorization for war that Congress essentially gave to then-President George W. Bush seems to have become this blank check, this forever permission that subsequent presidents use to justify any and all war. And we seem to have forgotten very dangerously that the authority, that the authorization for war has to come from Congress. A little known, little discussed item called the War Powers Act. What is Peace Action recommending Congress needs to do, not just on one war or on this war or that war, but in general to make the declaration of war a more democratic act?
Well, we need debate on all of these military engagements, and we need votes ultimately. We would oppose every military engagement we're in right now. We think they're doing more harm than good to U.S. security. But there needs to at least be a debate. I will mention that there is a bill that's in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee by Democratic Senator Tim Kaine, who ran for vice president, and the chair of that committee, Bob Corker. And it is an authorization of the war. They throw in the Taliban, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and they kind of restart the clock. To me, that's institutionalizing the problem that you just raised. So just passing a new bill that has no geographic boundaries, that has no real time boundaries, that has no real clear boundaries of what the goals of this military engagement are, and most importantly, doesn't really make Americans safer, is a horrible idea. And so that bill may move forward in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I think some people will welcome that, and part of us would too. At least we're debating this endless war, but that particular piece of legislation, we think the senators need to go back to the drawing board. And even if you think that what we're doing militarily is a good idea, let's have a sunset, let's have other ways of bounding that, we'd still ask senators to vote no. But at a minimum, that's the only sensible way of moving forward in terms of Congress actually exerting some oversight over these wars.
John, give out a website for Peace Action or where people can keep in touch with the work that your organization does.
Yeah, it's simple, www.peaceaction, one word, www.peaceaction.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our site. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you so much for covering this.
My guest has been John Rainwater, Executive Director of Peace Action. We've been discussing the latest news in U.S. foreign policy, including the Senate committee approval of Mike Pompeo to be State Secretary. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.